This is Amber.
And this is Shannon.
And you're listening to
Twin Beaks,
the Chicken Fanatics Podcast.
It's fucking great. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 6 of the Twin Beaks podcast. This is Shannon.
This is Amber.
And this is the Twin Beaks podcast. So, we've got a guest in the studio for our chick update. This is week five for the chicks. Yeah. So, our update's going to be kind of brief because they're just clucking right along doing their thing, but we did have one incident we wanted to share with you guys, so why don't you tell them about why we've got this one in the studio?
Well, this one's our special guest because he had a little trouble and
she
had a little trouble and seems to have fully recovered, but she had an impacted crop, and I noticed because she kept trying to, you know, kind of puke it up over and over, like something was wrong, and I looked at her. And the crop was so packed full. It was like all the way out on the chest and the side. And you could see it from the top, almost like from the, you know, on the shoulder was so packed. So that was very troublesome. So we put her in quarantine and gave her just only water for all day long. And it seemed the crop felt very, very, very hard at first, and then over the day, it started feeling softer and softer until I put her back with the other hens, and she's fine now. So that was lucky. She seemed to be doing horribly, though. Her head was drooping. She was just looked like she was in a lot of pain.
So let me take you back to the beginning a bit, because that was all pretty fast. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to throw in there how this all started, which was kind of a subtle thing, right? So first thing I noticed that morning was that she would walk over to the water bowl and then do this weird little dance thing, right? Like she was acting really erratic. You remember
I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah, so that was when we started paying attention to her, and then eventually you went over there and got her out of the cage, and that's when the physical inspection told you something was up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then once I noticed, it's kind of one of those things where when you realize what was going on, it's like, oh my gosh, how could I have missed that? Because it was really just bulging out, really.
Wow, my goodness.
Flapping of wings here.
That's what happens when you beat your wings on the microphone. Jeez. My goodness.
Hi.
We'll have to do some...
a little editing.
Goodness.
Goodness sakes.
Pot that down or something. But so this is the second incident we've had with the birds that we possibly prevented worse problems from occurring through observation of subtle signs.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing to keep in mind, you know. And especially if you don't have a lot of birds, because it gets kind of tricky to really sit there and watch them if you've got like 50 or something like that. But you know, if you've only got 8 birds, you should be able to keep an eye on them for strange behaviors. Like the first one we could tell was having a hard time going to the bathroom. And sure enough, there were problems there that we cleaned up. And the second one, it was on the food coming inside.
Yeah.
Impacted crop.
Yeah.
And what do you think would happen if all we did was throw food and water at the birds and change the cage, and you think we probably would have lost her?
I don't know. I think it could have cleared up. Sometimes it does, but other times the crop can go sour and actually, I don't know exactly, I don't remember, but bacteria and things start happening
it
in there.
It starts to ferment in there.
And then
isn't that it?
It's something like that, and that can create toxicity, and that can kill the bird or harm the bird, and
I think their crop will literally just explode.
And sometimes it can actually
rupture.
Yeah, it can rupture. So the bird might have died if we hadn't done anything, and it might have cleared up too. So So, and I know that there's...
Certainly we saved her a lot of trouble.
A lot of pain and discomfort.
I should say you did. I went to work.
At least, yeah.
I knew you had it.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Yeah, so, yeah, she was very... You know, birds really, in general, don't show pain or discomfort. They you have to keep a very, very close eye on them because they kind of hide it a lot better than mammals. They're not known for, you know, shrieking and all that. So if a bird looks really sick,
subtle,
then there's probably something really wrong with it.
That's true, yeah. If there looks like there's something wrong with your bird, there probably is.
Very wrong with your bird, probably.
Yeah, it's a good idea to...
Yeah, so this little guy's still with us. It's very exciting.
But you also have to learn to not get too paranoid and fussy.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it just, like the leg problem that the one got, it just shook that off.
Yeah, yeah. And this bird, honestly, who knows if this has happened before, and I just, you know, you didn't notice, and it comes and goes.
It's true.
But this is great. I feel really, really excited and proud that we haven't had any fatalities. We have 100% survival rate so far, and they're getting to be the age where they're a lot less delicate. So I feel pretty confident that most of them are going to make it. And what an accomplishment. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. And this is a good time, I think, when they're about this old, to start thinking about selling off extra ones. You might decide that all of your birds are going to live. So if you got a couple extra, then you want to thin them back. And it's true that you can sell them for more when they're older, but then you have to calculate in how much money and feed did you pour into that bird to get it to that age.
Yeah.
You know, stress on the other birds from overpopulation, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
every hen in the yard eating worms eats, you know, some extra share of the others.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Or how, you know what I mean.
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
But yeah, so it's a good idea. I'm personally a fan of keeping the feather footed ones because they're so friendly.
They're so nice.
And the silver girl, even though she's kind of crazy, like ninja crazy. Yeah. Fun little personalities.
Hard to decide, though. They're all pretty nice chickens. One of them, the little one that was blocked up when we first got the little chickens, definitely seems smaller and a little less lively. I think that chicken maybe just was just having a hard time from the beginning. So she's very healthy, but she's a lot smaller and just not as vivacious as some of the other, definitely on the bottom of the pecking order. So I might be doing her a favor if I sold her. Maybe she'd have a chance to be not at the very bottom of the pecking order.
Sure,
else.
Somebody with just one
Who
other
knows?
Chicken.
Or a nice pet, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, that's about all that's going on.
Let's take a peek into the chicken cabinet of curiosities then.
Okay. Would you like to hold this little chick while I do that?
Let's put her back.
Okay, so now it's time for our chicken cabinet of curiosities. And first on the list is a mother and daughter team in Cornwall, England, who started knitting sweaters and little jumpers for battery hens. And they've been rescuing battery hens for quite some time and noticed that they were having a hard time acclimating to the cold weather because a lot of them, due to the stressful conditions, had started picking out their feathers, and a lot of them were bald. So they made these sweaters for them, and it's pretty crazy. And it took off, and they sell them to people, and they give all the proceeds from the sweaters to Project Primrose, an AIDS orphanage in South Africa, and It's very interesting, and while it's very good for these battery hens with no feathers, there's some animal advocates that advise that, chickens don't really need any extra layers. But let's see, they also mentioned that They had used fleece on some turkeys and other poultry for the same purposes, and that worked really well because the chickens didn't get caught up in it so much. And I could see
you
that.
You said fleece?
Yeah, it's like a... I can see this because at the animal hospital I work at, we avoid using anything with loops or, you know, we cut all the tags off the towels, everything, because birds are just famous for finding a way to get their little talons tangled up and things like that. So, yeah, the fleece is more of a solid, warm, fuzzy piece that they can't get tangled in. And, yeah, I kind of think, right, you know, this trend has really caught on, I guess, of selling the chicken sweaters to people. They think they're really cute and everything, but I think probably normal chickens don't really need sweaters. You know, nature's done their job really well, and the feathers, they know how to you know, puff them out or smooth them down with muscles in their skin to adjust to the temperatures and things like that. So yeah,
I've had chickens get frostbite before.
Have you really?
Yep. Inside in that camper.
Really?
In that camper.
Oh my gosh.
Which had insulation.
So is it on the comb, or where'd they get the frostbite?
Yeah, in the wattles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have some breeds with very small combs and wattles, and those are actually for really cold climates because they're known to get frostbite when they have the very big flamboyant ones.
So it's good to protect your chickens from the cold, because mm-hmm. just because they're meant to withstand it doesn't mean they're impervious.
Right, right.
You know. Water resistant, not waterproof, like the packaging says.
But yeah, the sweater should probably be for a purpose, not just for, I don't know, that's how I feel. Probably a lot of people feel different.
I would think that, I mean, if it's knitted, they might even scratch and get their toes caught in it.
That's what I would be concerned about, yeah.
But presumably they've thought of that when they made their chicken sweaters. I don't want to say that their chicken sweaters are unsafe. I think it's great that they're doing something for charity.
I think that's fantastic, and In this article I read, it mentioned that when they have the chicken sweaters on them, they keep an eye on them and make sure they're okay, and it just kind of helps to get their body temperature up.
Oh, for the battery hens, that's a great idea.
I think it's fantastic. It's just wonderful.
Here's a thing that I learned. Mm-hmm. You were talking about birds getting their toes tangled up and things, and this is a tip for people that might not think about it. So you know, you've got your coop, right? And usually somewhere locked up in something is your chicken food for storage, you know. So you walk the bag in there and open it up and pour it into the trash can or whatever you've got. And if you drop those white strings that you use to pull open the top of the feed bag in your chicken coop, mm-hmm. eventually one of your hens will get that thing wrapped around its toe and tied. It's amazing their ability to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and sooner or later, if you drop enough of them in there, that'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually have to be vigilant about leaving things that your chickens can get their toes wrapped up in. Like bird netting, say, mm-hmm. from fruit trees or grapes that you're mm-hmm. protecting, stuff like that. And the thing about it is, you might not even notice, because they'll continue to walk around with this string tied around their foot.
Oh, geez.
You know?
Yeah.
And when they perch, you might not see it, because mm-hmm. it'll be wrapped around, or they sit on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one thing I got in the habit of doing, actually, at night, is going through the coop and just looking at everybody's feet.
Oh, that's a good idea.
To see if they had anything. Because it doesn't take very long for a string to just cut off that toe, and especially with smaller birds.
Yeah. And if they're free-ranging, who knows what they can get into.
Or worse yet, they can get it wrapped around themselves and then wrapped around something else out there,
mm-hmm.
and then you don't find it, and it kills it.
Yeah,
watch out for little bits of string from those feed sacks and mm-hmm. everywhere else, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wanted to mention it because it popped into my mind, and who knows if I would remember it later. But.
And I would never thought of it. I always put it in my pocket anyway, because it seems like kind of like garbage. But, you know, if I was more just like kind of like, oh, it'll biodegrade, whatever, just put it in the ground. That's good to know.
Yeah, that was kind of my idea, was that I was just burying it in, old chicken
Yeah,
bedding.
like keeping it out of the landfill and
But
stuff, yeah.
if that stuff does, and it would just decompose. But if that stuff doesn't break down before they rototill it up, and then it, you might not see a dirty brown string wrapped around your chicken's
Yeah,
foot.
might lose a little toe or something. So, this is. Oh, wait, did you want to say anything else?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just saying it happened to me once. The bird got its foot all. Fortunately, it got its foot wrapped up to the point that it was walking funny, and I noticed
Oh my
it
God.
and saved it. But yeah.
Ah, poor bird.
Then I got all paranoid about string.
Yeah, that's probably good. I never thought of it before. So, that's a really good point. Definitely something to watch out for.
Sorry to interrupt.
Oh
On
no,
with the curiosities.
I think that's a great story. I mean, it's totally something good to think about and keep in mind. So thank you for interrupting, actually. Yeah, but the next thing is something I'm very excited about because if they had something like this in our town, I would totally take advantage of it. It's a chicken hotel. And
Chicken hotel.
a chicken hotel.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it opened for business at Boscawen Helston. I should have looked where that is. I'm guessing that's a Scandinavian country, but or city, but it was set up to give chicken owners a place to check in their birds while away from home, and it was started by David Roberts, a 31-year-old math teacher who keeps his own chickens, and he had the thought that something that is difficult for him and then also holds other people back from owning chickens is wondering what you're going to do with them if you ever want to leave or go on vacation. And I go through this all the time because, who are you going to trust to take care of your beloved chickens? And I don't know, it's just all these thoughts go through my mind if I leave someone in charge of them while I'm away. Did they close the door? Did they feed them enough food? I hope they're cleaning the water. I hope, all these things like a worried parent, you
Pet
know.
sitting can go awry. I
Yeah,
have
yeah.
stories of that too, but
Yeah. So this is really cool. They have this chicken hotel, and when they first started, everybody laughed at them, and I guess they thought it was a big joke and ha ha, have, yeah, right, a chicken hotel. Who the heck is going to use that? But I guess around the major holidays, like, Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter, they're booked, like completely booked up. And
No room at the chicken
no,
hotel.
yeah. So, and
Fantastic.
they have specially designed coops that were created by Mr. Roberts, who started it, and he was a former cabinet maker. And the prices start at £2 per coop per night, plus
Wait. Oh, pounds, because
yeah,
it's,
because it's
yeah.
another country. But let's see, it says each coop holds 8 chickens, so says 4 chickens sharing costs £5 per night. That's not bad. And the chickens are allowed to roam free within the grounds before being gathered to roost at night. And what other things did they get? They had the brand new purpose-built accommodation is on offer with a buffet breakfast, lunch, and dinner of local produce served in the open air. So I guess these
Oh my
chickens get to
goodness.
go free ranging and they get fantastic local produce.
Free range
Yeah.
and a buffet.
Oh my word.
That's
So
pretty funny.
that's pretty cool. And they'll even come and pick up your chickens from your house and bring them there if you need it. And they offer a nursery for chicks and an incubation service if eggs need hatching. So they just do everything for you. There's no reason you can't just leave and go on vacation, even in the most challenging situations, like your eggs are about to hatch. They'll take care of that too. So
That's pretty
it's
amazing.
fantastic. I would so use that if it was around here. I really would. That's amazing.
Well, I think that'd be a great opportunity for some really chicken crazy people out there. I mean, you could tell people that you don't have a problem, it's a business, you're making all kinds of money on the holidays, taking care of other people's chickens.
That sounds so wonderful.
It does
It's a
actually.
dream come true.
It's kind of like other people's kids,
I
you get
know.
to play with them and then they come and take them back.
Imagine, you know, you always have that dilemma, what kind of chickens should I get? Well, if you do that, you can experience being around all kinds of different chickens.
Yeah, more chicken hotels out there. That's what I say.
More chicken hotels.
All right, so let's do our topic.
Yes.
Okay, so what are we going to talk about today?
Chicken coops.
That's right. Chicken facilities.
Yeah. So once you've chosen your chickens and prepared your yard and all that, then you can start thinking about what kind of coop you're going to have and how you're going to set it up for your chickens.
You're going to set it up before you get your chickens.
Yes, you better set it up before you get your chickens. Oh, my goodness. Yes.
So there's a couple of different schools or directions to take this in. The first is portable, like chicken tractoring.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like the stationary coop. And there's going to be totally different design plans.
Mm-hmm.
So chicken tractoring is, you know, a lightweight portable endeavor. There's lots of chicken tractoring plans on the internet. It's just a really light frame box that you move around with maybe some room to keep their feed and water in. And the idea is you should be able to move everything in a truck in a, you know, a minute and a half or something like that.
Yeah.
So Joel Salatin has, that's S-A-L-A-T-I-N, I believe, has great videos on doing that.
Oh, yeah. How to do it quickly and all this. He's so efficient. It's amazing.
That's for people that either have a very small number of chickens or a lot of space.
For what, the chicken tractoring?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that's true. But Joel Salatin does, he has a ton of chickens, and he shows how he does that in an efficient way that's not a ton of work for him.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing, actually. So,
yeah. He's a superstar.
Yeah, he's amazing. Amazing. You got to check him out.
We'll have to have him on the show.
Someday, perhaps, yes. Love to talk to that guy.
Well, I've heard he's a pretty friendly guy to talk to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the idea there is, of course, that you move the tractors and let them basically graze the land, get all the ice cream, so to speak, the good stuff, and then you move it to the next patch and move it to the next patch, which is, you know, a great feed saver. You should feed them too, probably, but it's more work than the stationary method. And I'm going to assume that most people are going to have a stationary coop here.
Yeah. Although the chicken tractoring has a lot of advantages over letting your chickens run around your yard. You can kind of control where they're going to go and what soil they're going to be tilling up. And you can kind of, if you move it in a pattern, you can avoid them just completely decimating a whole area. So that's a really nice thing. And you can keep their poop off of the places where you don't want it and from them jumping up on things and eating your plants and stuff like that. So they're really, that's a very, very good reason to have a setup like that. And a lot of people will have a stationary coop that's small and then something like that. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You could have both if you like.
But one should look at their yard like, if you let a bunch of chickens loose in the yard and you have two or three of some kind of plant or it's lightly scattered around the yard, they will go and eat every single one of those before they move on to the other stuff. There's that tendency. It's high grading. And the problem is that it wipes that plant out and then it doesn't reproduce and is not available.
Yeah.
Whereas if you chicken tractor or use rotational grazing, or just set up, you know, divide your pens up and move them between quarters of a pen or fenced-in area, then you can prevent that from happening because as the rotation works through, the plants and bugs and such replenish themselves.
Yeah, and that's really cool because in that sense, they're kind of growing their own food because they're fertilizing and tilling and then giving it a chance to grow back so they don't just completely gnaw it down to nothing and scratch out the roots and everything. That's great. You know, you can provide a lot of their food by letting them kind of free range.
I don't really want to get into design too much because it's fairly simple and there's a lot out there.
Sure.
And yeah. One thing that you do have to think about with them, though, is predators, because with a stationary coop, you get to really armor it up and, you know, make your fences all tight and everything. But with this, it's portable, so you've got, mm-hmm. you know, you're laying a square frame on uneven ground, and there's mm-hmm. going to be low spots for things to crawl under.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something you want to think about is predator management, because mm-hmm. it, I don't know, Joel Salatin seems to think it's not a sort of just, I don't know, in my opinion, brushed off the question as it's not really a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of incredulous to that, because I think if I did chicken tractoring out in that big field by my house up on the hill, they would just get turned into snacks in time.
One thing I remember he said, I'm not quoting him, but my general memory of it was that he made sure that the chicken tractors weren't next to any large, you know, hedges or things that animals, predators could hide in and feel like they could dart out and do stuff. So they really had a long run in between where predators could be hanging out and the chicken tractors.
Yeah, that's right.
He said that discouraged a lot of that.
They don't like to run way out. They don't like to be exposed, basically.
Yeah.
Although I wouldn't count on that to protect my chickens, because mm-hmm. many a time I've seen like a bobcat or a coyote or something just standing in the middle of a field.
Mm-hmm. Depends on how hungry they are, too.
Well, they aren't even hiding. Know? They were just, you know,
I see.
Walking through the field.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
I don't know. I'm a little skeptical. I think if you had a lot of dogs around,
mm-hmm.
you know, or we're doing it within a large fenced area, it wouldn't be a problem.
The other thing is, remember he said...
Or you had
so
many chickens you didn't care.
Yeah. Remember he said he had an alarm duck?
Yeah, that's right, the alarm duck. I don't know how that protects them out in the middle of nowhere at 3 in the morning.
I think it was more just... I don't think... One thing, I don't think you leave your chickens in the chicken tractor overnight. I don't think... I'm not sure that anyone really does that, so... I think they go in a coop at night in most instances that I've heard of, because they have to roost and stuff. So, I wouldn't leave them out, because that's when most of their predators are nocturnal. So,
yeah.
But I guess the duck, what was it? They kind of alarm or whatnot, like before, or see predators before.
They're always
chickens.
Vigilant,
so
I guess.
They're good to have one or two of them, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen coyotes hunting in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the truth is that if you put a big box of easy meat out there,
you're gonna have to watch
at least where
bit.
I was, you know, where, you know, I think it was a little bit more sparse of an mm-hmm. environment, they get brave.
But yeah, because they probably don't learn to be wary of humans quite like the, you know, other. You know, coyotes especially, they learn to be afraid of humans and not to go close to the human things, because they've probably seen their pack mates shot and things like that. So.
And then there's the ones that go urban and get fearless, and they're the real ones to watch out for.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The people that have problems with wildlife, and this is a total tangent, but tend to not be the ones that live out in the middle of nowhere or the ones that live in the middle of the city, but the ones that live on the edge, which
mm-hmm.
makes the most sense if you think about it.
Yeah.
But, so anyway, moving back to the subject
of chickens.
Yeah.
Sure.
Why don't we talk about the stationary ones, I suppose.
Yeah. So one thing you want to think about is your roosts. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure that they're an appropriate size. The chickens like to usually get as high as possible, so you want to make sure there's nothing else in there that's higher than the roost. For instance, my chicken coop, it had a little overhang on the inside that I hadn't quite trimmed off, and it didn't even seem like a chicken would really want to go up there. It was only about 6 inches wide or so. But because it was higher than the other thing, the chickens, you know, I couldn't get them off of it, and it was really a bad place for them to be because they were mashed up next to the chicken wire on the top of the coop, so that predators could get right up next to them. And of course they were pooping all over it, and it was plywood, so you know, got to be quite a mess. So a lot of people suggest you have a couple different levels for your birds to roost on. And that's nice because they don't have to jump all the way down if they're a very heavy bird. And, you know, I've seen some interesting things, like people use old ladders that they've attached to the inside there for coops. I've seen ones where they made sort of a stepped thing out of, you know, dowels, and then they have attached with, like, carabiners, clips on loops, a tarp underneath all of that, so you don't have all this chicken poop going on the ground and getting all nasty in there. It goes, the tarp is like a, almost like a hammock under the roost, and then you just take it out and spray it down with your hose. And that can save you a little bit of cleaning. Some people put kind of sand boxes I've seen underneath the perches, well, the idea being that the poop, you can kind of clean it out. But I've never used that, but I would kind of expect that the chickens would get up there and just scratch it all over the place. I don't know if those work, how those work, but definitely all kinds of interesting ideas out there for roosting.
It's a good idea to think about what's under the roosting spot. You mm-hmm. know, you want to set up your coop with it in mind that the roosts don't go over the food and water.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I think
very important.
Ideally, a slightly sloped towards the floor,
mm-hmm.
Because usually roosts go along the sides, you know,
uh-huh.
of the thing, that so you can walk in there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or the back. But anyway, under it, sloped towards the floor,
mm-hmm.
Slightly a linoleum surface would be ideal. It's, you know, enough that you could put some sort of bedding on it,
mm-hmm.
but not so much that you have to scrape everything off. You know,
yeah.
it wants to just slide off.
Uh-huh.
The floor of the cab over was linoleum
uh-huh.
that I put pine shavings over,
mm-hmm.
and that worked out pretty nice because the pine shavings absorbed, you know, most mm-hmm. of the stuff, and then when it came time to clean it, everything just swept right out of the...
Oh, that's cool.
As long as you didn't wait too long. If you
yeah.
let it get all nasty and pancaked,
yeah.
then it sticks, and
yeah.
then you have to go in and chisel. But even that's easier with linoleum.
That makes sense, because, you know, I know that the wood, it being porous, it you
mm-hmm.
know, when something's dry on that, it really kind of...
Plywood is work.
Plasters on there, and very... It's all like lots of little nooks and crannies and crevices where bacteria can... I was thinking, what I hadn't thought of that before, but that seems like a good idea for maybe nest boxes too. Stuff
yeah.
like that, yeah.
Yeah, nest boxes are an interesting design problem because you kind
mm-hmm.
of want a front lip to the thing.
Yeah.
But then that makes it difficult to clean.
Yeah.
So ideally, if you wanted to put some time and energy into it, you could make some sort of hinged thing that would
mm-hmm.
just unhinge, and then you could just sweep everything
yeah.
out of the nest box.
I saw this pretty brilliant design that was set up pretty much like your normal basic nest box that you see on the wall with the little cubbies and stuff, but they had taken those cheap plastic dishwashing bins that you get and just cut out just like the front of it, so there's the ledge, like you said, and then
mm-hmm.
they had to, you know, kind of file it down and make sure that's not sharp and stuff,
sure.
and put it in there. But that's real nice because you could just take that out and wash it, and then it's
mm-hmm.
perfectly
done.
Clean. Yeah.
yeah.
So if that, I thought that was a great idea.
So yeah, generally the principle in my mind when I think about design is, what can I do to save me work over time, even if it's just a slight bit amount more of work,
mm-hmm.
you know, because
yeah.
taking, if it's a little bit extra effort to save yourself a small amount of work that you're going to end up doing
yeah.
dozens and dozens and dozens of times, it's
mm-hmm.
worth it to take that step.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've seen stuff like people using really cute wicker baskets from thrift stores for things that they hang up, but then, you know, you think about that and think, oh boy, that sounds like a nightmare to
what is it gonna
clean.
Look like in 6 months.
Yeah. yeah, so
but then maybe
know,
who cares, you go
maybe
get
that's
another
more
one,
important, you
compost
wanna,
it
want it to look cute, so.
Yeah, there is that kind of trade-off of cute versus utility, and
everyone has different, you know.
You know, are you going to keep your cute-looking little Victorian cottage hen house clean, or is it just going to get spattered with chicken stuff and you'll get tired of scrubbing it? Maybe you're going to keep it all clean and perfect-looking and more power to you, but it's worth considering, you know.
Yeah. The utility.
Because I've made some cutesy things on my hen houses before, and they just end up looking wrecked in a couple years.
Yeah, me too. Chickens,
They're foul.
They're foul.
They can be.
Yeah.
So, let's see, what else? A good roof, generally, because you want to keep, you know, your birds dry. And it also traps heat in, so that's important.
I kind of like the clear corrugated plastic just because of the, you know, maybe a strip or two of something solid, but that's nice because it keeps the predators out, but it lets the sunlight in.
Well, it depends on where you live.
True.
If you took the chicken coop that we have here up to my place, the elements would destroy it.
Too hot?
Like absolutely. The wind would tear the stuff off the roof.
Right.
Yeah, it would be too hot. Yeah. It would be too cold.
And if you build a chicken coop,
not to mention the animals.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you build a chicken coop, something to keep in mind is, can it handle wind? And you have to really secure it because it's common for chicken coops, I guess, to blow over.
Yeah, you don't want the wind ripping your chicken coop apart at night. There's stories about that, and none of them are good.
Yeah.
You might end up with your chickens scattered all over the valley, roosting in trees, and then you gotta try and recover them, and that's always a problem.
Yeah, and once they learn they can get away from you and hide up in a tree, oh boy.
I've got stories about that too. Yeah, gotta nip that one in the bud.
Little devils.
So yeah, good roofing. I think I would definitely do more than a layer of corrugated, if nothing else, to retain heat better. You know, the roof is actually the panel, if you will.
I might be talking more about the run. Solid.
Oh, no, I was thinking of the actual coop.
I would make that solid, I would make that really strong, you know?
Yeah. So there's that. Well, communication.
Good to clarify.
Yes, that's right. Good to clarify. So let's see, there's also nest boxes, right?
We kind of went over that.
Internal versus external.
You want to talk about that?
Well, sure. So there's different ideas in internal versus external nests. You know, you can see pictures of chicken coops where the nest box is sort of built on outside of it, and then there's ones where the nest boxes are inside. The idea, I guess, for an external box is that you can access it from the outside and just open up the back of the nest box and pull out eggs, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which I guess is nice. And then, of course, internally, they're safer. That's, I think, the big difference. And also, less exposed to the elements. Like, if you live somewhere really cold, your nest boxes are just sort of hanging out on the outside of the building compared to tucked in inside where everybody's breathing and keeping things warm. And, you know, so there's that.
I don't know if it matters to most people, but when you go into the coop, you're going to have to trudge through whatever's on the floor. So if that matters, you know, having it outside might be a little cleaner. But
personally, I think that the internal box is better and that you should go inside to collect your eggs because it forces you to inspect.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I don't like the idea of just you never go in the chicken coop except to pour water and food in it. And then you open up the nest box from the outside.
Yeah.
Because it tends to keep you from seeing what's really going on in there. Whereas if you have to walk in and out of there to collect eggs, then, you know.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, I think.
I think you miss stuff.
Yeah,
or you could potentially, you know, like not notice that there's mice in there.
Yeah, you can notice all kinds of things just by going in there and looking at it. I actually found this 4-point daily coop damage inspection online, and I'll just kind of summarize, but it says to look for splintered wood near the doors and windows to see if something's been trying to like claw its way in or pry in there, or sometimes animals will pull out screws. They can be quite strong, so it says look for chewed wood. You can reinforce corners with you know, some sort of welded wire hardware cloth, and says, you know, look for digging under the coop. And yeah, so
animal signs generally.
Yeah, just holes, just you know, I just went in my coop the other day, hadn't looked at the outside nest box area for a while, and noticed that part of the corner was just completely rotting away. It was still there, you know, you wouldn't really notice it until you put your hand on it and see that it's completely soft, and that if a predator did notice that, they would probably be able to get in there pretty quickly. So
yeah, it's a good idea to look for spots that they could get in instead of looking for spots where they got in.
And then things just fall apart over time. That's just the nature of things. So, you know, just look for decay and deterioration.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good opportunity going inside there to look.
Doors and windows.
Mm-hmm.
Ventilation is a good idea.
Yes.
If you don't ventilate your coop properly and you don't keep it clean, their waste will generate
ammonia,
right? Which can blind them cause respiratory problems. And it's not good for you, too. There's another reason to go into your coop, because you go in there and go, oh, it doesn't smell good in here.
Yeah.
And you've been negligent cleaning.
Yeah.
So you should do that. Also, the ventilation is good because when you go to clean it, you might get sawdust and powderized other things that you want to breathe in as little of as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Might be a good idea to wear a dust mask.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I'll just leave that at that, I guess. So yeah, ventilation is good for that. And then, of course, if you have windows, you have to look at them from a security perspective.
Mm-hmm.
For the windows on my cab over, I just nailed fireplace screen over the outside of the building.
Cool.
Yeah, they weren't going to get through. Nothing was going to get through that, really.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty simple. And the nice thing about using a cab over was that the entire outside of the shell minus the very bottom is aluminum plated plywood.
That is awesome. Very
so
tough.
Even if the wood rots, you know, they've still got to get through the metal.
You can get those for real cheap or even free.
Can get them for free if they're trashed.
Yeah. That's, and you know, some of these chicken coops you see for sale are I see them on Craigslist here for over $1,000 for a smaller chicken coop.
So. Yeah, it's true. And those
not
chicken
the classiest
coops,
thing, but you know,
well,
it works.
Okay, so size of flock matters too. Like I had 17 birds. If I, at a minimum, at all times. And you know, if I had just 4 or 5 hens, I wouldn't use something that big. But it made sense because it was already out there and I had a lot of other buildings to build. And yeah, it doesn't sound very classy, but I painted it and that made a huge difference.
Cool.
So if you want to use something like that, I would just suggest, you know, looking for one that's kind of beat up because then it'll be cheap or free.
Yeah.
And just looking for staining on the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Does it leak?
Mm-hmm.
Try to get something that has a rounded roof as much as possible. Because the roofs on those things tend to go bad. And other than that, just make sure that the doors and windows are secure, because you don't care about the rest. You're going to gut it anyway.
Yeah. Do you think it would be possible to find one that did have leaking and put some sort of, you know, secondary roof on it? Because I see a lot of them that people are getting rid of because they're leaking. It's kind of common.
Yeah. I guess what I would say is I would only do that if I was going to build a full-on second roof.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Because the thing about the roofs on those things is once they start going, they keep going.
It's like a structural thing. They're just
and
not
then you're
strong.
Committed to like putting roof patch on the top mm-hmm. of it every year.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Fixing like trailer roof mm-hmm. is always a dubious proposition.
Okay.
And usually a nasty, messy, you know.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Huh.
On the other hand, if one just leaks here or there,
mm-hmm.
it's not like it's going to kill them.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's not too bad.
Hmm.
Oh. But. Yeah. I like insulation if you can because mm-hmm. some places require heating and some places, I guess, cooling.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to do that, you might as well have an insulated building.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can manage it.
Yeah.
Even if you use cheap, you know, something besides, like, you know, home building insulation, fiberglass, that standard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that fills the walls
yeah.
is insulation.
It's insulation. So
yeah.
You can get real creative. And you can reuse a lot of things for chicken coops. I've seen people who get old Victorian furniture. You probably see it all the time, like especially if you live in a big city, you'll see furniture on the street that's missing all the drawers. You're like, oh God, you know. But you can take that home and maybe a beautiful piece and then slap some little planks across in there and there you got your nest boxes and that there you go. And you know, there's some other kind of cool stuff of people repurposing things. I saw some of, like, you know, gutted antique cars that people had put chicken wire just on the, you know, all the broken out windows. And they're cleaned out, of course. These are really old things.
Right.
And they turn those into chicken coops, old wine barrels, children's playhouses that they put up on stilts. And those
I think that's a good idea.
Easy to clean and secure. So
those things, I bet, secure up really good if you'd, like, screwed some latches to it and...
Yeah, so you just get real creative with reusing
cute.
Junk and keeping it out of the landfill. You don't have to spend $1 million on.
Okay. Well, what about the people that have $1 million?
Oh, well,
there
there's
are
chicken palaces.
Some of our lucky listeners, I'm sure, are millionaires.
Oh,
so.
My gosh. I wish I could recommend a site right now, but I have seen gorgeous chicken coops. They look like little Victorian mansions and little Wild West town, you know, shanties and
wow.
all these, like,
all thematic,
captivating little fantasy worlds for your chickens to live in.
Is there a pirate ship one?
You know, I'm sure there is.
Somebody make a pirate ship chicken coop.
I mean, yeah, I wish I could remember all the interesting ones I've seen, but they're pretty cool.
Star Wars chickens. No, but I don't know if I should admit this or not, but I do kind of like the really cutesy Victorian ones.
Those are my favorite too.
If money was no object.
Like the little gingerbread house, Victorian chicken coop. It's so awesome.
That would be especially cool if you had a house like that.
I know. I can dream.
Well, this is a nice Victorian.
Yeah.
We do live in a Victorian.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like one of those chicken coops, though.
It's maybe twice the size of a chicken coop. But
that's right. Well, it doesn't look like one of those chicken coops.
It's a tiny, it qualifies as a tiny house by some standards, although I don't feel
goodness.
That it's that tiny at all.
Oh. Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that.
So if you have the resources, a really good thing that you can think about is having a second, smaller coop. And there's a lot of reasons this can be very, very useful. And one of them is for when you have a broody hen, you know, a lot of chickens will compete over the same nest. It's a very popular nest. They'll try to kick the other bird off of it. And it's very nice. So you can give a mother hen just a private, calm, quiet place and a place to raise her babies, because a lot of the other hens don't have quite the maternal instinct for the babies that aren't theirs, and they'll actually harass them and sometimes think of them as little intruders and will actually attack them, and the mother bird may not be able to prevent them from being injured by the other adult birds. That's a good reason. And another good reason is you can use it as a hospital coop for injured birds. And this is just really wonderful because, unfortunately, chickens, they love to peck at wounds. And if it gets bleeding, they just won't stop. And the chicken won't be able to heal, and it'll cause it a lot of stress. So putting it by itself can give it the quiet, safe place it needs to heal and recover. another reason, you know, as a hospital sort of concept, is when a bird needs medications in its water, you don't want to give that to your entire flock necessarily. That can be a strain on their liver and their system, and they may not need it. You may just have one bird that needs that. So you can carefully administer that to them and give them the correct dose and see how much water they're personally consuming in there, and check their droppings. That's nice to be able to, you know, look at that. It's a good indicator of their health. And another good one is that a lot of times the rooster will have a favorite hen, and he can be a little over amorous. So sometimes it's nice to give them a little break and get them away from the randy rooster. And so, yeah, I've heard too, you know, that you might want to use it as a quarantine, but the thing for introducing new or rescued birds, but the thing about that is if you do find out that they have a sickness or a disease, a lot of times that can stay alive in the soil. That's and true. Can still be passed on to other birds even after the chicken itself has been removed from there. And you the only way around that is to bleach everything. Lots of diseases can live in the soil for quite a long time. Like, yeah. Even some diseases I can't think of right now, you can basically never have birds in your that area
again. It's so, the salted earth chicken disease. It's
so,
fortunately, it's not too common of a thing to get birds with that, but
so that's better.
I can't remember
like
the name of that disease either. We'll have to look that up.
So for those purposes, you might be better off having a large cage and something that you can really scrub down and clean and sterilize. So yeah, but that's a luxury. But if you can afford it and you have the room for it, it's very handy and a really good idea.
Well, I don't think it takes much to have something.
Yeah, it can be kind of small.
You can take like a large doghouse and just screw a gate over the door.
Yeah.
And if you've got is one bird,
yeah.
I don't really think of that as a luxury. If you've got enough birds, I mean, it's practically a necessity.
That's true.
Especially with the broody hen scenario, because in your chicken coop, you want the nest boxes kind of high up off the ground, just for to prevent depredation, and just the birds prefer it, right? But you can't do that with a broody hen, because eventually those eggs are going to hatch, and then it won't take long before the chicks try to explore outside the nest, and then if they fall off of this precipice, they're not going to get back up.
And it's they are ready to go very, very young. Like,
and they,
if you don't notice, they hatch within a few hours, they could be trying to cruise around. So
in a few days, it usually takes about 3 to 5 days for them to start really hopping up and moving around. But I remember at about 3 days they start poking out and just sort of start exploring the outside of living under mom.
I know
it takes a while to
first,
get up,
right?
And run around.
Yeah.
But
because they don't eat the first few days, right? So they could stay under their mom, huh?
But the important part. Yeah, they do. They have to get out and eat. That's the thing.
Mm.
But the important thing is they do that before they are able to maintain their own body heat.
Mm-hmm.
So if they fall off the ledge and can't get back up, it doesn't take them very long to
then
die.
Then mom has to choose who she's going to keep warm, the ones
right,
on the
that's
ground
true.
Or the one in the nest. And
yeah, and when I've blown that one before, that's what you wind up with is mom with on the floor with a bunch of chicks because she goes after it and then the rest of the chicks follow and it's a bad scene.
That's, yeah, it's a long way to jump.
Much better. So you're with the secondary house, you want that nest box to be on the floor.
Yeah.
And that's also for if you have injured birds, they don't have to hop up and down.
Yeah, perches are better not to have them for injured birds.
Right.
Yeah.
So it can be something small and simple.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, obviously you don't want your quarantine space next to the rest of your birds. So I would even recommend maybe having a plan for quarantine because unless you're importing birds regularly into your flock, you don't really need a quarantine space permanently or often. So just like a fold-out cage somewhere away from everything else.
When I've been really unprepared before, I've actually used the bathtub.
Yeah.
Just like covered it with something I had so I could kind of put it over the top.
Chickens in the bathroom.
Made it comfortable in there and stuff.
I have been there.
Yeah, because then you can kind of scrub it all out, wash it down, take whatever out, some towels and things. But
my chickens basically took over the second bathroom.
Yeah.
That was my quarantine space.
I've done that too. And my housemates have not been entirely pleased about it.
Well, I didn't have to worry about them. But so, let's see. I guess there's probably a lot still that we could talk about with chicken coops. And we'll probably sort of spread out from there as the shows, as we continue with shows.
Yeah, we'll have definitely, there's a few tips and tricks that we left out this time for little like chicken hacks that can make your life easier, make them more healthy, but we're going to save that for the next show since we're going on almost an hour now, so
yes, going
better wrap
on
it up.
About chickens. All right, everybody, thanks for listening to episode 6 of the Twin Beaks podcast. Stay tuned when we give you more chicken tips, tricks, and all sorts of silly things. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening.
And in other news tonight, Mr. Bill Gates has taken time out of his very busy schedule to share with us how he plans on taking over the world with a vast army of chickens.
You know, there's no investment that has a return percentage anything like being able to breed chickens. If you get a family a starting kit, which is sort of a rooster and several hens, then they're breeding the chickens and using the eggs to make more chickens. These chickens are multiplying on an ongoing basis. So, you know, there's no investment that has a return percentage anything like being able to breed chickens. It's the classic thing of teaching somebody how to fish. Now, if you don't live near water, then it's pretty hard to fish. But, you know, the parable could have been stated in terms of giving somebody a chicken and showing them how to raise chickens. In fact, in West Africa, at least, there's more people who are eligible to raise chickens than there are who have a boat and can go out and go fishing. The whole point is that they essentially find their own food, and they can eat food sources that are not chicken food sources. Now,